Okay, what you see handing out now is the, are we going to do the state plan seminar on the overhead? Oh, wow, you're all right. Is the handout for Providential Financial. It's Anthony Saccaro, who your pastor knows really well. He will do, it's totally up to you. It's available to you if you want it. He will do your living trust, pour over will, durable power of health, durable power of attorney, and HIPAA agreement, which I will go through. And then he'll meet with you individually, and you'll get a notebook about everything. He'll help you fund it, the assets into the trust. Like I said earlier, for $950, it's available to you if you want it. It's totally up to you. I think you'll find out that's a pretty good deal. Huey's going to let you know, but Anthony, he set aside a tentative date of December 14th. What he does is he gets all these sign-up sheets, people that are interested, and gets them all back here and meets with them in a session and tells you exactly what he needs from you to do the living trust. And he picked a time of December 14th at 6 o'clock p.m. sometime here. That might not work, but if it doesn't, then we'll just have to notify people, or you'll have to through Anthony. So if you're interested in this, fill it out and give it to either Huey or John or me, and then we'll collect them and get them to Anthony, and the process will begin. It takes about 2 or 3 months to complete the trust. So anyway, that's available to you if you want it. All right, just a few things. You've heard this before, but I like to mention it when I do this seminar. People, the fraud issue in this country is becoming epidemic. There's just a lot going on. Foreign countries, foreign people that are getting impact in insight into our private information, and there's a lot going on. Guard your Social Security number. Don't ever give your Social Security number. Don't give out the last 4 digits of your Social Security number unless you know the people you're dealing with. They can take the last 4 digits, tie in your birth date, and come up with the other digits. Guard your passwords. Guard your passwords. Don't give any personal information over the telephone. Be careful what you throw in the garbage. If it's got personal stuff on it, shred it. Shred it. They go to the garbage dumps. IRS will never email you. Some of you have probably gotten calls from Internal Revenue Service. You owe us money. We're going to put a lien on your house. That is bogus. Hang up on them. Tell them to drop dead and hang up. That's not the IRS calling you. They will not call you. They will not email you. Those are frauds. Those are frauds. Beware. Beware. Beware of people offering you a great deal for you to invest your money. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Now, I went to Bank of America. That's where I bank. And I got 5 of the executives together. They know my ministry. They know what I do. And I said to them, okay, talk to me about debit and credit cards. Here's what they said to me. Now listen to this. None of them use their debit cards for normal purchases. They only use their debit cards to get cash out of their checking account at the branch. They told me that debit cards are the number one target. I said to these guys, you never use your debit cards to make normal purchases. No. Because your debit cards are tied to your checking account. And they said the majority of the fraud is foreign. If someone in another country gets access to your debit card and they milk your checking account, that money is gone. You will not recover it. If someone does it from the States, you got a chance of getting it back, but it'll take months. So beware, beware. I haven't used my debit card. My wife hasn't used our debit card, in months to make a normal purchase, only to get cash out of our checking account and at the branch. Don't use ATM machines at the mall. That's where they are defrauded. That's where they're getting access. They have devices that can get your credit card number and your debit card number. Why would you use an ATM machine to get cash? Why would you pay a fee to get your to get money out of your account? That doesn't make sense anyway. Okay, let's go through this handout. Number one. You're getting closer. Yeah, you must be a Purdue grad. There you go. Stewardship is not just money, time, or talent. Stewardship is all of these and more. Stewardship is the very life God has given us, and someday we shall be responsible to give an account of it all to Him. How many of you listen to David Jeremiah? All right, David Jeremiah is a great ministry in El Cajon. I grew up with Dave in Toledo. He's from Toledo. That's out of his book on finance. Two precious freedoms, the right to accumulate and the right to give it away before and after you die. $250 million per week goes into probate court undesignated. Millions of dollars per year go to federal and state treasuries because people die without heirs and without estate planning. 30% of adults have done have a will written correctly. Less than 10% of adults have done any serious estate planning. 11 of 12 women will become widows. Look at that one. 11 of 12 women will become widows and will be widows for an average of 11 and a half years. Why spend 40 years acquiring an estate, 10 years trying to conserve it, but not 2 hours on what you're going to do with it when you pass away? Shake off any notion that you need to be rich before you need an estate plan. If you're like most Christians, tax considerations take a far back seat to the top priority of estate planning, taking care of your heirs and the Lord's work. What's at stake is perhaps best seen by conjuring up the mess you can leave behind if you procrastinate all the way to the grave and die without a will. Your state's rules of intestacy provide a one-size-fits-all estate plan for you. That simply means, folks, that either you have had an estate plan, will and or trust, done by an attorney, or the state of California has done one for you. There's a will for you put together by the legislature in the state of California, and I will assure you, you do not want your estate to pass according to the laws of the state of California and their will. You want to do it the way you want to do it. Contrast that to the almost unlimited flexibility that's yours if you write a comprehensive estate plan, including a will and living trust. You have the right to name the guardian of your choice. You can slice the pie however you choose. You want grandmother's house to go to a favorite niece or home to your church? No problem if you have an estate plan. Page 2. Basic terminology. Testator or testatrix, the person who makes a will. I'm talking about wills now. Testator is a male. Testatrix is a female. I'm surprised you're not using testaperson today. A will is a writing that provides for distribution of property upon the death of the writer, but which confers no rights prior to that time. I recommend you use an attorney. Attorneys know the state laws. They know the federal laws. Codicil is how you would amend the will. If you have a will now, you want to change something, don't cross something out right above it. You could void the whole document. You write a legal amendment. It has to be witnessed and everything. It's called a codicil. You live in a community property state. There's only 9 of them in the United States. You live in one. Community property means whatever my wife and I, we're residents of California, community property state. You all live in a community property state. Whatever you accumulate during your marriage belongs equally to each other. My wife and I own half of our estate. I own half, she owns half. If I die, she has her half, she gets my half. Passing your estate to your spouse in California is very simple because of community property laws. Separate property would be if, let's say, my wife's father dies, my father-in-law, he dies, and he leaves $50,000 to my wife. She puts it in her checking account. That becomes separate property. If she dies, that $50,000 has to pass to the heirs under her will or trust. If she puts my name on the account with her name, now it's community property. It's owned by both of us. Let's say she inherits her father's home, and the deed to the home has her name on it. That's separate property, not community property. If she puts my name on the deed with her name, then it becomes community property, it passes under community laws. Big issue, big issue. Probate. It's the act by which a proper court accepts the will and declares that the instrument satisfies the statutory requirements as the will of the testator, the person who wrote it. Until a will is probated, it has no legal effect. Probate costs vary from state to state. In this state, it's approximately 5 to 8% of the estate to probate it. It takes 9.5 months to probate a will in California, an average of 9.5 months. Executor, personal representative, the person who takes care of the estate when someone dies. When my wife and I had wills, if I die, she's the personal representative. She takes care of the affairs of the estate. She dies, I take care of it. That's when we had a will. If both of us would have been killed in a common accident, the alternate executor was my son. He would have taken care of the estate. Guardians, this is a big one. Persons designated to care for minor children upon the death of mom and dad. Now, this is a big issue because not too many years ago, there was a court case in Connecticut. Two couples lived across the street from each other. One of the couples was a pastor and his wife, great church, Bible church, godly parents. The couple living across the street were members of the church. They had a three-year-old daughter. They did their estate planning. They did their will. And they nominated the pastor's wife as guardians of the three-year-old if something was ever to happen to mom and dad. Mom and dad were killed in an accident. Pastor's wife assumed they would get the three-year-old daughter as guardians. Lady on their block wrote a letter to social services complaining that the pastor and his wife were religious fanatics. Social services came in, took the three-year-old, put her in a foster home. The pastor and his wife took it to court and lost. They took it to appellate court and lost. They took it to the Connecticut Supreme Court and lost. It cost them $100,000 to try to get possession of that little girl, which they never got. They were encouraged to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court. There's a problem with that. Number one, you got to get on the docket. Number two, it takes years to get adjudicated. By the time that would have been adjudicated, that three-year-old probably would have been a teenager. And if they'd have won, the Supreme Court probably would not have recommended to take her out of that foster home. So this couple wrote an article, appeared in World Magazine. This is the summary of their article. They said, when you're talking about guardianship, remember, you nominate guardians, you don't appoint them. A judge has to be involved. A judge makes the appointment. All you do is nominate guardians, recommend guardians for your minor children. They said, number one, favor relatives over third parties wherever possible. The issue is a godly home. If you don't have people in your family that has a godly home, then you're not going to leave your kids to those families. That's what you have a church like this for. You got people here who would probably more than be willing to agree to have be guardianship of your children. Number two, develop a relationship between the child and the person you've named. We told our kids, Pam and Jim, when they were youngsters, something happens to mom and dad, Uncle Don and Aunt Peg are your new mom and dad. They will take care of you. That became an issue when we disciplined them. They wanted to go to Uncle Don and Peg immediately. Number three, name at least three potential guardians. You name a primary, alternate one, and alternate two. Why? It'd be very difficult for a judge to turn down all three. Very difficult for him to do that. Number four, you can write a testimony in your will as to why you selected the guardians you selected. Could be for family reasons, spiritual reasons, financial reasons. You're giving the judge all the information he needs to have to make the decision you would have wanted him to make if you were still here. Remember, Mom and Dad, you're in heaven. You're gone. So a judge is making the decision who gets those kids. And you want to make sure he has all the information needed to make the decision you would want him to make. Remember, a judge has final say. That's the law of the land. Trustees. Trustee is a person designated to administer money and property for another's benefit. Minors don't inherit money. It goes into a trust fund, and it's managed by a trustee. Sometimes it's the guardian. Over the years, my wife and I, we don't now, we're too old, but over the years, my wife and I, when we were younger, we had a number of people ask us if we'd be willing to be guardians for their children, which we always said, sure, we'd be glad to do that. I just wanted to make sure if I'm going to be nominated as a guardian, my wife and I want to be the trustee to take care of the kids. I don't want to have the responsibility of somebody's kids but not have access to the money. I don't want to go to a third party for permission to do that. So I wanted both. We just told them, don't go on a cruise to the North Atlantic and end up in a ship like the Titanic. We'd have an instant orphanage. Tennessee in Common, Tennessee by Entirety, and Join Tennessee with Rider Survivorship. The next one there, Dewey. Simply what you see. If tomorrow you went to your bank and had them pull your signature cards, you would see your signature along with your spouse's with the little initials JTRS. That means Joint Tennessee and Right with Right of Survivorship. That means if one passes away, the survivor has immediate ownership and immediate access. If you pulled the deeds to your property, it would have your name, your spouse's name, with the initials JTRS. That's Joint Tennessee with Right of Survivorship. State tax is the everything tax. That's an excise tax levied on the transfer of a person's property by the federal government in excess of the unified credit. That's gone through a major changes in the last 20 years. When I started this, the first $250,000 of somebody's estate went to the kids, the heirs, tax-free. The next dollar was taxed as high as 55%. That's all changed. Now the first $5.4 million goes to the heirs tax-free, unless it's a retirement plan. Retirement plans are tax-deferred, not tax-exempt. We'll talk about that in a second. That's how you calculate the taxes down at the bottom. Go to the next one. What happens when you make your will? You exercise your right to decide how your property will be distributed. You provide for your heirs in a way that you choose. You make sure that others won't distribute your property according to their whims or uninformed opinions like California. You keep your property from going to undeserving people. You can disinherit. You can disinherit someone if you want. I was in a seminar in Idaho. Guy raised his hand. He said, I disinherited my adult son, my oldest son. And I said, why? I said, he walked away from the Lord. And I said, I got one question for you. What happens if he gets his heart right at your funeral? He didn't know how to answer that one. That's a toughie. Number three, you make sure that others won't distribute your property court. I did that. You keep it right deserving people. I did that. Number five, use a channel, written will, to admit charitable bequests. Don't forget the Lord's work. Folks, by the grace of God, what we have. By the grace of God, we are what we are. When you do your estate planning, don't forget your local church. Start with your local church. Number six, you provide guardians for your children if they're minors. Number seven, you avoid misunderstandings among your heirs. I know of biological brothers and sisters today who don't speak because of the way mom and dad's antiques and heirlooms were divided when mom and dad died. I witnessed a fist fight in a funeral home. I witnessed a fist fight between two brothers in the funeral home next to dad's casket because they were arguing over his gun collection. We had to take him outside to break it up. Say, those things don't happen. Are you kidding me? I could write a book on this stuff. Number eight, you have the final word in fulfilling your goal as a good provider, a good citizen, and a good steward of your property. Well, if you don't have a will, you die intestate. We talked about that. State of California steps in. Go on down, Huey. Go on down. Next section. If you have a will not, check to see if there's been a change in your marital status. Second marriage is always complex. So you've got two separate families involved. That takes some good counseling on how to divide up that estate. Has there been a change in your health status? If you've been diagnosed with a disease, make sure your estate planning is in order. You know, I got a call from a widow. I don't know, this is maybe a year ago. Husband was diagnosed with cancer. 6 months before he died, he canceled all his life insurance and never told his wife. That's wrong. That never should have happened. Have you moved to another state since making your will? Will is a state-by-state issue. If you had a will drafted, say, in Arizona, and you're now a resident of California, probably ought to have it reviewed to make sure it fits California statutes. Are your beneficiaries still living? Are they still worthy? Do you want to keep the same executor, guardian, or trustees? Number six, do you still own the specific properties that were mentioned? I was doing a seminar, I believe it was in Montana. There was a widower. He had two apartment houses and two sons. He dies. He wants the one son to get the one apartment, the other son to get the other apartment. He sold one of the apartments and forgot them in his estate planning until he saw that little note. Number seven, is your family secure enough to permit you to switch some bequests from them to charitable organizations? My son-in-law is a physician. My son's a CPA. We've told our kids, as you get on financially, we're probably going to leave less to you kids and more to the Lord's work. They won't come to my seminars anymore. They think they're getting their legs cut off. Number eight, you may then need to review your will and trust with your attorney. Next page. This is an important issue here. What to do in the case of the death of your spouse? I was doing a seminar, I believe in the state of Washington, and they asked me to stay over another day because two women had become widows within the previous couple of weeks. They wanted me to meet with these widows. They didn't know what to do. So I stayed over, and I met with the widows, got them on a direction, came home that Monday night, sat down at the dining room table, and I said to my wife, do you know what to do if something happens to me? So we went through a process. It took us a week or so. We put all the documents pertaining to our marriage together, started with a marriage certificate. Then we took the deed to the house, the title to the two cars. We took my retirement plan documents. We took all the documents pertaining to it and put them in a pile, put a rubber band around it. Then we answered all these questions on this sheet. And you can get this sheet from Huey. We went through all these questions. There's 15 of them. And we answered these questions on a piece of 8.5 by 14 yellow pad paper. We took those answers, wrapped it around the documents, put in our safety deposit box. People, if I keeled over dead with a heart attack, my wife would go to the safety deposit box the next day, get out the documents, put them on the dining room table, after she grieves, of course, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, while she's planning the cruise. She knows where everything is at. She knows exactly what she has to do. My son's an alternate trustee. He's a successor trustee of our trust. He's on the safe deposit box signature card. Something happens to my wife and I. He goes to the safe deposit box, gets out those documents. My son knows where everything is at. He knows exactly what goes where. He can begin distributing cash to him, his sister, and the Lord's work the next day. He just has to make sure all the bills are paid because he's the trustee. Slick as a whistle. Go down the bottom, Huey. You can get this checklist from Huey. Go on down, way down. There's 15 of them. Keep going. All right, look at that last statement. Too often, a lot of time and money could be spared if a departed spouse could return for 20 minutes and answer a few simple questions. All right, next page. Now, let's talk about the living trust. My wife and I were concerned about the cost of probate. We were concerned about the delay of probate. While a will is being probated, it's under the control of the probate court. The government has control of that estate. So my wife and I put together a living trust. We had an attorney do it for us. The attorney I'm recommending to you redid it for me recently, okay? All right, my wife and I are co-trustees of our trust. It's the Rickard Family Trust. We are co-trustees. We then funded the trust with our deeded and titled assets. My wife and I don't own our home anymore. It's owned by the Rickard Family Trust. But we're the trustees, so we control the home. If we had a mortgage, we don't, but if we did, we continue to pay the mortgage. We deduct the interest on our tax returns. My property tax statement is in the name of the Rickard Family Trust. I pay the property taxes. I'll pay them this month. I'll deduct them on my tax return. Nothing changes, except we don't legally own. When I had life insurance, my wife was not the beneficiary of my life insurance. The Rickard Family Trust was the beneficiary. Why? If my wife is the beneficiary of my life insurance and I die, and she gets the proceeds of the life insurance policy, she puts them in her checking account, then she dies, you're back to probate. Remember, you're trying to circumvent probate. So the Rickard Family Trust is the beneficiary of my life insurance at that time. Our checking account doesn't say James W. and Joni Rickard. It says the Rickard Family Trust. James W. or Joni Rickard, trustees. Any money that's in our checking account is owned by the living trust, the Rickard Living Trust that we control. We have a little savings account. It's in the name of the Rickard Family Trust. I have a little stock. It's in the name of the Rickard Family Trust. Let me say it to you this way. When you pass away with a will, you pass the ownership of your assets to your heirs under probate law. That's why probate court's in charge. When you put your assets into a living trust and you die, you pass the ownership of your assets under contract law. My wife and I have written a legal binding contract honored by all 50 states that gets the government out of our life when it comes to our estate. People, that is huge. Let's say you have a piece of property in California and you have a piece of property in Arizona and they're in a will. You have a will and you die. You have probate in California. You have probate in Arizona. You need an attorney in California. You need an attorney in Arizona. Let's say you put those houses in the living trust. Now the family trust owns those two houses and you die. There's no probate in either state. There's no attorney needed in either state. You've taken the government out of your life. You've taken the lawyers out of your life. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Look at the advantages of revocable living trust. Move on down. Keep going. Right there. Whatever you have in the trust bypasses probate. There will be minimal or no attorney fees at death. The attorney fees are when you had the trust prepared. Distribution can take place immediately. Like I said, if my wife and I got killed going home this afternoon, my son goes to the safety deposit box tomorrow, he can begin distributing the benefits to the heirs immediately. Letter D, you can revoke it or change it at any time. If my wife and or I are alive, either one of us are alive, we can change the trust any way we want. When the second death occurs, that trust is in concrete. My son cannot change the trust if my wife and I die. He can only carry out what we told him to do in the trust. It's a contract. Letter E, it's confidential. Folks, do you know wills are a matter of public record? Huey, if you pass away and you have a will, do you know your will is a matter of public record? I could go down to the county courthouse and get a copy of it. That's how charlatans get access to widows. Living trusts are confidential. Nobody has access. The only people that have access are the heirs and the trustees. It's nobody else's business. It's confidential. That's why it's very rare for a trust to be contested. Look at that letter F. It is more difficult to successfully contest than a will, a trust. Wills are easier to contest because it's a matter of public record. There's public notices published. So-and-so, you read it all the time. You read the obituaries. That's how charlatans get access to widows. Yeah. Unbelievable. Go on down. Disadvantages. All property you wish to be distributed to the trust must be put into the trust. You have to fund the trust with your deeded and titled assets. Like put your checking account's name on the trust. The trust must be maintained over your lifetime. Just have to remember, you buy a piece of property, buy it in the name of the trust. Letter C, it's more expensive to create. Wills will cost anywhere from $5 to $1,200. Living trust can cost you anywhere from $900 to $3,000, depending on how complex you are. We don't have to get into this one. All right, go to page 6. Keep on going. All right, powers of attorney. Go down to the second and third one. No, third one and fourth one. Right, special power. Health care. I want to do the health care. My dad knew he was in trouble. Died in 1986, heart attack. 1985, I'm back there visiting him. He knows what I'm into this stuff. He said, son, I don't want to be on life support if something happens to me. I don't want to be on life support. So I went down, I got his health care power of attorney, and he signed it. My dad has a heart attack. I fly into Detroit. I meet with two cardiologists at the hospital. He's brain dead. He's gone. I meet with my mother, my brother, my sister, and I said, I've got dad's health care power of attorney. Let's unplug him. He did not want to be on life support. So we did that. Go on down to the next one. 5 years later, my mother's diagnosed with dementia. My brother calls me. She's living in Cedarville with my brother. My brother was the vice president at Cedarville. So he calls me, and he said, Jim, mom's been diagnosed with dementia. She's okay now. She's competent now, but it's coming. I said, Don, go down and get his DPO, get her DPOA. So he went down to the attorney, got a DPOA, durable power of attorney. Mom signed it. My brother transacted business from my mother until she died. Slick as a whistle. Go on down. Go on down to the last one. HIPAA. Are you people aware of that if I'm traveling, and I'm in Jacksonville, Florida, and my wife is in Newhall, California, and I'm hospitalized, do you know that my wife cannot get access to my health condition without a signed HIPAA agreement? Are you aware of that? Most people are not. That's a 2007 law under Bush. So your attorney does your estate planning. He will have HIPAA agreements. My kids have HIPAA agreements signed by my wife and by me. In the glove box of their cars, the kids. I have my wife's, she has mine. If anything happens to either one of us, my kids can get access to our health condition, I can get access to my wife's, and vice versa. All you gotta do is fax or email a copy of that HIPAA agreement. That is huge, people. because there's liabilities when hospitals and doctors reveal the health conditions of a patient. That's become a massive issue. That's why you have the HIPAA agreement. So, you get an attorney that does your estate planning. He'll do your living trust. He'll do a pour-over will, P-O-U-R. You can't handle guardianship through a living trust. It has to be done through a pour-over will because a judge has to be involved. Remember, living trust, there's no judges involved. There's no government involved. It's a contract. Guardianship cannot pass by contract. It has to pass by will because a judge has to make the final decision. So an attorney will do your living trust, your revocable living trust. He'll do your pour-over will, P-O-U-R. He'll do your durable power of health. He'll do your durable power of attorney. He'll do your HIPAA agreement. Anthony will do all of those. He'll meet with you on a date. Right now, it's December 14th. All of you who are interested can come and meet with him as a group. He'll tell you what he needs from you in order to do your trust. Then you get him that information. He does your living trust. Then he'll come back a month or two later and meet with you individually and take you through the trust. It comes back in a notebook. I'm going to tell you, folks, I've been doing this for over 40 years. It's the best trust I have ever seen. He is the best I have ever seen. I had him redo mine. I want to see how he did it. This is a number of years ago. He did a great job. $950. Shop the market. If you can do better than that, great, do it. But I'm telling you what, it's a deal. It's a deal. I would strongly recommend Anthony, and your pastor knows him personally. Great guy, member of Grace Community Church, godly guy, loves the Lord, terrific guy. So there you have it. There you have it. Any questions for me? Yes, ma'am.
Living trust, are you speaking more to families?
And I can't hear you.
So for living trust, are you speaking more to families and married couples versus singles?
No, living trust would apply for a single as well as a married couple. It depends on the size of your assets, how much you have accumulated. If you just got out of college and you don't have any assets, then you don't need a living trust. You know, if you're a married couple and you're the big thing to you would be make sure you got guardianship provision for your youngsters. You know, when you get an estate of over 100,000, then you might want to consider a living trust. Once you do a living trust, it's done. It's done. It rarely requires a change. Let's say my wife and I have 8 grandkids and 2 kids. And let's say our distribution, there's a percentage when we die that goes to each kid. And we decide to change the percentage. Now we got to get it amended. Other than that, you know, buy a house, you don't have to get it amended for that. It's automatically covered in the trust because the name of the house, the title of the house is in the trust. So once you do it, it's really done. Rarely do you have to get it amended. But if you have to get it amended, it's only like $50 or $100 to get it done. So I tell you, it just gets the government out of your life. That's why we had a living trust, why we got it, main reason. All this stuff that I'm talking about is on those two CDs. The first part that we did this morning, and then this part is on the second CD, and there's a study guide with it. So it's all there, and like I said to it earlier, they're $20. If you buy one, you want to reproduce it, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get it out there. So they're over there. They're available to you if you want them. Yes? There you go.
Can you hear me now? Okay. So I wanted to know, you've covered stewardship, you've covered financial freedom, you covered estate planning. Obviously, finance is a very broad topic, and it hits different dimensions of our lives as believers. And I wanted to know, when you hold workshops, and I know this is only, you know, slicing the surface, so to speak, do you have, tackle other aspects of finance, like, hey, if you have this amount of asset and you're looking towards investing, you know, what is a responsible Christian to do? And you know, hey, here's a formula that I would recommend as a just a kind of a general rubric to break down where you would provide your giving, where you would invest for personal purposes.
Right.
This is what, and I was wondering if you have something like that you offer for folks.
I don't, no. Okay. There's no rule of thumb. Everybody's different. Their circumstances are different. You know, their desires are different. It takes someone with experience to sit down and say, I just don't have the time to do it. You know, I just don't have the time. I tell you, one of the great follow-ups in a local church is that we've seeded the subject today. be great if someone here would take the bull by the horns and follow through with this. Maybe get Ramsey stuff, maybe get Larry Burkett stuff, and teach a class on this stuff. It's a great ministry. And then make yourself available to counsel people who need help. Yeah. I can tell by the questions I've got. There are some people here that could use some counseling. But that's true of every church. That's true of every church. Be great if someone like yourself or someone would just say, hey, you know what, this is a great ministry in my church. And just sort of take the step up and say, you know what, I'm here to help. That'd be a great ministry. You bet. That's what I would recommend. Yeah, I used to do it. It's a lack of energy. I just don't have the energy anymore. You know, I can do so many things. And the most important thing to me right now is go to Michigan football games. Not really. You know, I really enjoyed your people. I've enjoyed the day. I hope it's been helpful to you.
Jim, I was going to ask you, as it relates to preparing for our kids' futures, we see dangers with money all over the scriptures. Just any practical wisdom as it relates to how much time you want to spend as parents preparing them. It's one thing for a college fund, but it's one thing if you're trying to plan out their whole, you know, compensate for their entire life.
I recommend the parents that they play that first tape to the kids. I think it'd be a good lesson for them to hear that first tape, that first CD we got. I think it'd be good for them. We never hid things from our kids. We kept them in the loop. You know, I grew up where you didn't talk about religion, you didn't talk about politics, you didn't talk about money. That's baloney. That's baloney. We kept our kids in the loop. Not about religion, but we kept our kids in the loop on things. We told them. Our kids know our estate. They know what we're going to do with our estate. We've kept them in the loop. I think that's healthy. You know, families, if you're struggling financially, hey, share that with the kids. You know, they need to know that sometimes things are tough. Things are tough. And they need to be aware. They can pray too, you know. They're part of the family. I think that's healthy. Sure. What do I read? Kipling or Letter, and I like the USA Today financial section. I don't like the USA Today. It's too liberal, but financial section is usually pretty good. I get it twice a week, on Fridays and on Mondays. Yes? Question
regarding socially conscious, like 401ks or investments. What do you think about those? Because we were at one point for us financially, I was putting money into our employer sponsored 401k, but I don't know where the money's going. So we kind of had an
issue. How old are you?
How old am I now?
How old are you now?
45.
45. You want to be moderately aggressive. Moderately aggressive. When you become 55 or 60, you want to be conservative. Because you don't have time to recover if you make a mistake when you're 60, 55 or 60 years old. Just remember, Will Rogers had one of the greatest statements. I'm not as concerned with the return on my money as I am the return of my money. Be careful where you put your money. Be careful. Make sure those investments are guaranteed in a federally insured account. If you're in the stock market, make sure you're in the stocks that have a lot of cash, those companies, and they pay dividends. Those are your successful companies. If you get into a startup, only put money into it that you can afford to lose, because chances are you will lose it. 80% of people lose that money. 20% of it benefits them. We're plowing new waters in this country. We're facing $21 trillion of debt. I will say this. Is this recorded, John? Okay, well, I'll say it anyway. I will tell you, I told the guys last night, I am a Donald Trump man. You better believe it. When you look at the state of this country economically, you couldn't find a better man to be president than the one we have. You sure wouldn't have wanted the alternative. He's conservative. He's not owned by anybody. He's not owned by the lobbyists. He's not owned by the politicians. And that's what this country needs. We're getting our respect back in the world. He has drawn the line with the North Koreans, with the Iranians, and et cetera. We'll see how it plays out. But I'll tell you what, we haven't had a president like this in a long time, and this is what the country needs right now. Hey, let's see how it works out. If he bottoms out, if he blows it, fine, fire him. Elect somebody else. They'll probably do a worse job. But I'm just telling you, this country's facing some challenges. And I don't know what that means. Are we facing economic Armageddon? I don't know. I don't really know. But the challenges are there. That says what we did today, you need to be a good steward of the resources that God has given you. Don't be careless. Don't get yourself into debt that you don't have to get into. Get rid of the debt you've got. Because who knows? I don't know. Nobody knows. What happens if we hit the wall? Nobody knows what that means because we've never been there before. The depression of the 20s would be nothing like a depression today. It's a whole different day and age. This is global. This is global. This is huge. And we're playing with fire. We really are. And I don't know. But here's the thing. Do I worry about it? Not a bit. Do I lose a second of sleep? No, sirree, Bob. Why? My God is sovereign. My God is in control. Do we deserve God's judgment? You better believe it. We have murdered millions of babies. Homosexuality has taken over our culture. And if God decided to judge America, to bring it to its knees, the quickest way he could do it would be economically. And he could do it overnight like that. Is that in our future? I don't know. Am I worrying about it? No, neither should you. God is in control. But we do have a responsibility to be stewards of the resources he has given us to be stewards over and to be generous with that. Be generous of that. Start with your local church.
For singles, well, maybe it's a stupid question because I don't really know, but how would you calculate your total assets?
Same way I would counsel a married couple.
In total,
make sure you're a good steward. Make sure you don't get into needless credit card debt. Don't get into credit card debt.
I mean, like, what counts as like your annual income? Does that count as part of your assets?
What money you're putting aside in a pension plan? Uh-huh. Are you buying a house? Are you renting a house? Did you steal a house? You know, whatever. No. You have some stewardship responsibility. Remember, just focus on handling your money well.
Right.
Being generous to the Lord's work.
I guess I was thinking of like, okay, you said if you have $100,000 in assets, then consider doing a living trust. And I was like, okay, well, how do we do the math on like what counts as?
Just from what you're telling me and what you've told me, you probably are not in the market for a living trust right now. That's probably not going to affect you. Okay. I'd say that's down the road. And there's probably a lot of bachelors in here who would love to talk to you about the future. I know a couple guys up at the college that would be great, great guys.
I have a quick question. How would you counsel someone who feels like, well, maybe a living trust would be something that I would consider when I'm older versus when I'm younger?
Sure. No, if in your heart you don't think you're ready for a trust, that's fine. You know, if you have the money to do it and you've got some assets that you're concerned about if something happens to you, then yeah, you might be something to sit down and talk about a living trust. Meet with Anthony and ask him what he thinks. He'll tell you. Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if this is too personal. You mentioned, you know, credit cards are bad if you are not paying them off every month, but it can be used as a helpful tool. So I was just kind of wanting to know more about that. Is it okay to ask how many credit cards do you have? And what are like the practical advice as far as like using them for points? And that's primarily what we do, but do you have any
credit card?
Credit cards.
Yeah.
Because you use credit cards.
Let me tell you what I do.
Okay.
I have a Citibank American Advantage credit card. For every point, I get a point for every dollar I charge in this card. I'm on the road, folks. For every airplane ticket I buy with this credit card, I get a point for every mile I fly. My wife and I get 5 to 7 free tickets a year off this credit card. It costs us $35 a year. That's great stewardship. Great stewardship. I have never paid a dime of interest on this credit card. I've had it since 1991. You know what? They call me a moocher because I don't give them any interest. So when I fly out of Burbank, because the home office for Citibank out here is the Lakes, Nevada, next to Las Vegas. I fly over Las Vegas. I wave out the window and thank them for their free ticket.
So would you say if you're, you know, budgeting and you're living under your means and all of that, as far as using the credit card on a regular basis within your budget and all of that,
sure.
Is wise
sure.
to get all of the different like mileage points or
yeah, I have one
money
credit
back.
Card. I have one credit one card. Credit That's card. It. And I pay it, you know, my credit card billing cycle starts the 23rd of the month, ends the 22nd. All right? 22nd of October will end my billing cycle. That's a week from today. Monday, the 23rd, I will print out my credit card bill. Let's say it's $3,001. It's due November 12th. It'll be due November 12th. Let's say it's $3,001. I'm in a hurry. I write a check for $3,000. I send it to Citibank. On November 13th, I still owe a dollar. You know what happens? I pay a late fee, and I pay interest on all those charges. Let's say I owe $3,001, and I write the check on November 10th. And it gets to Citibank on November 13th. It was due the 12th. I pay a larger late fee, and I pay interest on all those charges. That's how they make their money. So when I print out my bill on the 23rd of November, it's in the mail by the 25th of November because I want to make sure it gets to Citibank. And I check my checking account to make sure it clears, to make sure it got to Citibank.
But you would say if you're able to, then you should just, and you're able to pay it off every month, no problem, just put as much
yeah,
on there so
that
you can get that back.
That credit card does not come out of our wallet unless we know we can pay the bill when we get the bill.
Mm-hmm. One thing, actually, a little thing is, you know, like, because just, you know, we're busy, there have been times where we've been late, like a day or two, we're like, oh, no, and we found that if we just call, if we've been pretty good every month, they have no problems waiving that.
Right.
No problem. We'll
They'll
send
work
it.
With
and,
you. They'll well,
yeah.
work with you.
So
yeah.
we've never had to, even when we've been late a day, they're totally willing to waive it. Because
they want to keep us
as a customer.
I mailed my check about 6 months ago, and it didn't get to the Lakes Nevada in time. And so there was a late fee. Well, it wasn't my fault. It got lost in the mail. So I called Citibank, and hey, no problem. You've been a customer for years, and they waived all that stuff. Yeah, they'll do that. Sure. They want to work with you. Don't forget, they get 2 to 3% every time you put a charge in. They get some money off that. So that's how they make their money. It's a great tool or terrible master. It just floats your cash between paychecks. That's what it does. All right? Okay.
All right, I got a question. So you were talking about the living trust and a will. Does that mean you have obviously a living trust, but you do not have a will, or you have both?
No, I don't have. I always have a pour-over will, which is not really valid anymore because we don't have minor kids.
Okay.
So the reason you would have a pour-over will is a safety mechanism in case you forgot to do something in the trust. That's the purpose of the pour-over will.
Okay. So
but if you have a living trust,
will.
you don't typically need a will.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Thank
it takes you. The place of it. And the most recent document is the one that suffices. If I had a will prepared in 2010 and I had a living trust prepared in 2011, it's the 2011 document is the one they go by. The most recent one that was prepared, dated. That's how they do that.